and in value addition, that's where the big bucks are. So there's also a very, very big challenge there, and really renewable energy technologies can be able to enable this, this transition to more value addition, increased yields, which can be really life-changing.
And that was Michael Miner from CLASP. Welcome to the Power for All podcast, a forum for leaders working to end energy poverty. I'm your host, Hannibal Brahana Tesfahonen. Powerful is a global campaign of over 300 partners around the world working together to accelerate universal electrification with renewable energy. You can learn more about Powerful All at our website, powerfulall.org, or on our socials, and of course by subscribing to our newsletter. Today's episode will focus on how we can make our agriculture sector sustainable using renewable energy technologies. To register that, I will speak with Michael Miner from CLASP. Good afternoon, Michael. Welcome to the Power for All podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Hannibal, and glad to be here.
Thanks, Michael. Can you give us a brief overview of what CLASP does in the energy food nexus?
Yep, sure. Yep, so my name is Michael Miner, and I work with CLASP as a senior program associate. I've been with CLASP for about 3 years now. But I've been in this renewable energy space for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And CLASP primarily is rather an international nonprofit promoting energy efficient appliances for people and the planet. And our work is divided in two main areas. We have our climate portfolio, which works primarily on policy support for governments, mostly in the biggest carbon emitters of the world. And this, we support governments on standards and labels. And then we have our clean energy access work, which is where I spend most of my time there. And under this clean energy access portfolio, our main goal is really to catalyze the uptake of high quality, life transforming, energy efficient appliances for the world's poorest people. And our work, CEA work, is mostly focused in Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia and Southeast Asia.
It's very fascinating. I think CLASP as an organization, you've said that you work on different clean energy appliances. And I know mm-hmm. that some of your appliance portfolio focuses on the agriculture side in terms yeah. of using renewable energy powered appliances in the agriculture side. So maybe can you give us a brief overview of your work on the agriculture space, and also what problem are you trying to solve in the agriculture space by using energy efficient appliances?
Yeah, sure. Our CEA work, it's really housed under the umbrella of the Efficiency for Access Coalition, which is a coalition mm-hmm. of donors, impact investors, and development partners who joined forces to try and increase the efficiency or double the efficiency while promoting affordability of the appliances that we use in our everyday lives. And mm-hmm. some of these appliances include TVs, fans, solar water pumps, fridges. And those appliances, household appliances, were our main focus for the first tranche of or the first layer program, which is the Low Energy Inclusive Appliances Program. But now we are moving more and more into this productive use, like larger appliances, just things like solar irrigation, walk-in cold rooms, refrigerators, for businesses and for health facilities. We have, we're also looking at egg incubators, equipment and agro-processing equipment, really any appliance that can enable the agriculture space, especially smallholder farmers. Those are our main focus. And what we do is mostly to, to try and promote innovation, just getting more energy efficient appliances or more energy efficient equipment to people's hands.
That is very fascinating. That's mentioning PUE or productive use of energy. That's a good segue into our next conversation. So as we know, there are different technology options for a farmer to choose from. Some of them are, let's say, powered by fossil fuel. So we can take diesel pump as an example, which is powered by diesel gas. And there are, for the different technologies that you have mentioned, there are different types of fossil fuel powered options. So what's the kind of the value proposition for a farmer to use the technologies that you're promoting? What's the benefit for the farmer to use the technologies that you're promoting? And also for the society or for the countries that you are currently working, what's the value proposition for those countries to adopt the efficient appliances that your organization is promoting?
Especially when you think about the agri-food space, when you think about mechanization and the equipment that are used every day by farmers, most of them are fossil fuel based. And for instance, like the like on irrigation, the dominant appliance or the dominant pumps are diesel powered or petrol powered, or we can call them engine pumps. And these are very prevalent in the areas that we've been working, mostly because these are the technologies that have been there for a while. They're quite affordable and they are readily available in every single market. You can be able to get an engine pump. But then again, that being the incumbent, we have these new technologies like renewable energy power technologies like a solar water pump. Solar water pumps, we view them as well. It's a niche technology, but then again, the value proposition of a solar irrigation equipment or a solar water pump is the low maintenance. The low maintenance of this technology for a fossil fuel pump or an engine pump. Today, an acre of land, just on average, most farmers spend about 2 liters of fuel every day. Like, for instance, in Kenya, that's about $1.50 per liter. Yeah. So, which makes it a steep cost for most farmers.
Yeah.
But then again, we have solar water pumps. Yes, the engine pumps are relatively affordable when you're looking at, like a one-off cost. But then again, we have, financing models like the pay-as-you-go, the pay-as-you-grow models that we've seen by various private sector companies. And farmers can be able to make their payments over time. And with innovation today, we have seen the price of these solar water pumps going down quite significantly. Yeah. I think the now an entry level engine pump is about $200, but at least we've seen that of solar water pumps coming down to about $400, which is quite a steal compared to considering that this is a one-off cost, and then obviously the running costs are generally zero.
Interesting. And I think Mike, as you have mentioned, some of those diesel power technologies are incumbents. So when you introduce new technologies such as solar water pump, walking cauldrons, they're expected that they will face an uphill battle in terms of convincing farmers to shift from the way they used to do agriculture into the new way of doing agriculture. So what are the challenges or what are the barriers that your organization is facing when you are promoting those products on the ground, apart from including affordability, awareness? What are the other challenges?
The challenges of promoting these productive use appliances and equipment to farmers, especially smallholder farmers, one of the biggest barriers is affordability. Mm. Most farmers are not able to afford this technology, not just on as a upfront cost, but also even as on a pay as you go model or a hire purchase or a payment plan. And the challenge we found in the work that we've been doing, especially in this program that we've been designing for the IKEA Foundation to look at how we can be able to scale up productive use equipment for smallholder farmers to be able to improve their livelihoods and build their resilience to the negative effects of climate change. As I said, yes, affordability is a very, very big issue. But then when you dig deeper about this affordability issue, it's because most farmers face other very complex challenges that are unrelated to the equipment. And one of the issues there that we have come across is, well, most farmers, yes, they don't have the scientific skills to adequately grow, crops and have the standard yields. I know, like in Kenya, the yield for an acre of maize is relatively low. Like it's quite low, significantly low compared to like in Europe or in America, mostly because of how the farming is done. Most people just do farming as a way of life. And obviously they don't take it, they don't put in, or they don't have that scientific awareness or scientific understanding of, what the soil needs, what are the crops that should be grown in this climate, what are the best varieties to grow. And this obviously affects their yield. And then again, when you think about on the market side, there's a business aspect of it. Farmers are known to be exploited by agents and by brokers. They're always price takers as opposed to being price setters, and this really affects their income at the end of the day. So when you look at all these challenges, then you see that even if you give a farmer an equipment, whether it's a milling equipment, it does not automatically translate to increased incomes. One of the biggest challenges for farmers today, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, is that lack of value addition.
It's true.
Farmers don't carry out value addition, and in value addition, that's where the big bucks are. So there's also a very, very big challenge there, and really renewable energy technologies can be able to enable this transition to more value addition, increased yields, which can be really life-changing. Sorry, I was going to mention that yes, affordability is one of the main issues, but also there are very, very big problems around awareness of these technologies. And we've done consumer awareness campaigns in Kenya and in other countries, and the awareness or awareness of these pure technologies by farmers is very, very low. Most farmers don't even know about the technologies, and those who know about them, they don't know where to buy them. So there's an issue there around just creating awareness for people to know more about these technologies, that they do exist. These are their benefits. This is where you can buy one, and this is where you can probably get financing for this equipment, and this is probably where you can get training for using the equipment. That kind of awareness is very much needed. And also there's an issue for areas, at least in the countries that we've worked with, areas that have some bit of penetration of these technologies. We have seen that yes, there is an issue of main installation, maintenance, and servicing ecosystem. That if you buy an equipment, you need to have at one point any equipment is going to fail, or it's going to need servicing or maintenance. So you need a healthy support ecosystem that can be able to ensure that the ecosystem is growing sustainably, that if an equipment breaks down, you can get or you can easily get someone to repair this equipment, because that again affects the adoption. Because if an equipment breaks down, no way I'm going to recommend, if an equipment breaks down and I can't get anyone to fix it, no way I'm going to recommend it to someone to use it. And what we found is that most farmers purchase equipment after they've seen it working for their fellow farmers, or they saw it somewhere working, and they'll be like, actually, this can change my life, or it can improve the way I farm, and then they go ahead to purchase equipment. And even coming from the companies themselves, we've seen that actually most sales come from referrals, which I think is a very, very interesting point to just build on or leverage on. That well, there needs to be more training and demonstration centers. And you can couple these training and demonstration centers with training areas for, not just for farmers, but also for technicians, where they can learn about these technologies and even how to service these technologies.
Interesting. I mean, I think the last point that you raised is very interesting, that we have seen in so many experiences that the best way to increase adoption of a new technology in agriculture sector is through word of mouth. When farmers see farmers in their neighborhood, in their area, adopt it and get the best results, they tend to adopt it themselves too. But I wanna focus on the affordability problem, because I believe that is the kind of the biggest barrier or the biggest challenge. And if you unlock affordability, you can unlock many opportunities in this space. So maybe if you can give us more detail in terms of what CLASP is doing to address the problem of affordability. You mentioned RBF earlier, you mentioned pay-as-you-go earlier. For some of our audience members who wouldn't understand those terms, can you give us a brief description what they mean, and also how is CLASP trying to address the problem of affordability?
Yeah, sure. And so when you think about affordability, there are very many factors that come into play. The landing cost of an equipment to a farmer's door, or the price that the farmer purchases this equipment at, is very dependent on very many factors. And one of them obviously is the technology, the manufacturing costs. There's the logistics, getting it into the country. There are the taxes, and then there's a, you know, there's a marketing and product promotion, and then there's a margin for the company that is selling this equipment. And what we have been doing as CLASP is trying to address different some of these affordability, if I may call them, pain points. And we try to promote innovation to get the best technology, best efficient technology at the lowest price. So we have innovation challenge funds, such as the LEA R&D or the E4A R&D grant, where we managed to work with a couple of companies testing out new technologies, like the use of brushless DC motors, which are more efficient and they don't break down as much as the brushed ones. And then we have, we came to understand that most of the companies promoting, these technologies, such as fridges, mills, solar irrigation equipment, egg incubators, solar powered egg incubators, they are mostly startups without like very well established distribution networks or systems. And what we do is that, you know, we see that like providing an RBF, a resource-based financing facility where companies are able to bid for an amount, for a fraction of the price of a unit, and they can be able to bid this from CLASP or from the from the program that is running, whether it's the Global Leaps competition or it's from the LEA RBF or it's from like now the Productive Use Financing Facility. And they can be able to use this money to get as many products into the country or into the country where they're operating or their market. And this obviously reduces, that cost of bulk procurement to get as many products into the market. And we've seen some of the companies using this savings or using this money from the RBF to, as working capital or maybe even just reducing the price of these appliances. And what we've seen even just from companies that we've been working with, just by by using this RBF funds to offset a very just some marginal cost of the deposit or the down payment of a fridge or the down payment of a solar water pump, it really impacts their sale within that year. So so there's obviously those dynamics, and also there's an issue of taxation. I think taxes and levies play a major role in the cost of an appliance. I think one company in Kenya, that's Sun Culture, I think they have a pump for about $700 now. But that same pump landing in Ethiopia goes for about almost $2,000. That's almost 2.5 times or almost 3 times the price they will be selling in Kenya. And this is mostly due to, obviously logistical issues, but also taxation issues. And what we've been doing, working with industry bodies like the Kenya Renewable Energy Association to try and, push the government to lower down the, to exempt or remove some of the levies, that are placed on these technologies, just to try and reduce that, that cost. And also there are a few like product promotion, costs that are incurred. Like if you move from one region of the country to another, you have to pay every single county that you cross, pay some advertisement fees, So these are some of the things that, some of the barriers that, these pressure groups or communities of practice try and eliminate just by, dialogue with the authorities.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's definitely good that you mentioned the pressure groups or the different stakeholders, which was going to be my next question, actually. I mean, apart from the farmers who are going to be the main users of the product, I mean, we also need some type of engagement from the government at different levels, at the federal government level, at the state and county level, and also development partners in the private sector too. So how do you see like the role of those different entities? Maybe you can tell us from your experience in Kenya, what has been working best from those different stakeholders? What is the kind of a successful case study where all those stakeholders came together and solved the problem in this ecosystem? And what do you think needs to be done to improve the current ecosystem of stakeholders in the PUE or renewable energy technology ecosystem in agriculture?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that are facing the scale up of productive use of renewable energy equipment for smallholder farmers or for farmers in general is the fact that, like, when you think about the agriculture space and the energy space, these are two very different spaces, but one or generally both complement each other, and we have found a lot of disjointed or disconnected, programs running. So the government launches a program in Kenya to support farmer groups to access fertilizers. But then again, they are not thinking about the mechanization aspect. There is no mention of, equipment or mechanization to be used. And this is where you have the ministry or the Department of Energy. It should be coming in to advise the government, because energy is an enabler. Energy is an enabler of other sectors. And this is where you need a lot of coordination and policy support, because the problems that affect farmers are very, very complex, as I mentioned earlier. And you need different people coming in to address a specific aspect of this problem. So, and when you have that at the end of the day, then you can be able to say that you're actually addressing the problems of these farmers, like an end-to-end solution. You're not just addressing one. So if you come and address inputs like fertilizer inputs, and you're not addressing the issue of market, or you're not addressing the issue of mechanization, then you really haven't solved the problem of the farmer. So I mean, what is very much needed is just, especially for these national government programs, they need to involve this cross-departmental or inter-agency kind of linkages or collaboration, but also you need to bring in the private sector, because, well, unless it's a socialist country, most markets are really private sector driven. And you cannot carry out your own programs in isolation or independent of this of the private sector. And one of the, a good case study would be the India case study, where the government has a subsidy program on solar irrigation. I think the national government provides up to 60% of the cost of the appliance, and then the local or the state government provides an additional 30% subsidy. So technically, the farmer is only paying about 10%. So when you think about a farmer using this appliance, only paying 10% the cost of the price of the appliance of the solar water pump, if this appliance breaks down and they have to fix it for maybe 20 or 30% the initial price, they will be like, you know what, actually I can just buy a new appliance and just leave this one. So you can see there's some sort of wastage there. But also, if a manufacturer is not part of the subsidy program, it's very, very hard to come into the market and be able to compete with products that are going for about 10%, So there's a need to have like a balance, like a sustainable subsidy program. Yes, subsidy programs by the government have the most impact, but again, they have to be sustainable, not to kill the market. As we have seen in other jurisdictions.
Definitely. I think what you are highlighting, Mike, is that there are so many pieces and parts that go into solving this puzzle of making PUE technologies mainstream, that you can't solve it by just providing the technology to the farmers. You also need to think about the agriculture side, the distribution, and all the throughout, I mean, like in a holistic matter, the whole ecosystem as well. And maybe I mean, there are different countries are at different stage of, let's say, development, or a different stage of adopting PUE technologies in agriculture. Kenya is, I mean, obviously at a more advanced stage compared to, let's say, other sub-Saharan African countries. So what lessons do you think other African countries should learn from Kenya in terms of promoting and adopting PUE technologies in agriculture?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think there are, when you think about agriculture, agriculture is very geography specific, especially when you think about the value chains to be grown in a specific region. They're very, very geography specific, obviously because of the agroecological zones and everything. But I think, especially on the policy side, I think one of the Kenya has been a pioneer when you think about the distributed renewable energy space, just from the adoption of the, you know, solar lighting, solar lanterns and solar lighting systems. And when you think about solar home systems, you know, the market in Kenya, I think it's one of the, you know, has been, is one of the most mature in sub-Saharan Africa. And obviously because there are some enablers, especially things like mobile money. I think mobile money has been a major, major enabler for a solar home system units. And even now thinking about productive use equipment and companies looking to do pay as you go. And that kind of, enabling environment, I think, has been very, very instrumental in driving the sector forward. But also the government has played, its role, especially in, adopting developing and adopting standards, at least for solar home system units, and maybe in the future they might adopt standards for equipment. Like meals, walk-in cold rooms, refrigerators, and even solar water pumps, to just make sure that, you know, consumers are protected at the end of the day, because any productive use equipment is not it's a huge investment for any smallholder farmer, and consumers have to be protected. And I think the government has been very, very crucial in just driving that, making sure that there's a quality assurance framework in place to just make sure that products coming into the market are, conform to the standards or to the accepted standards. But then again, they are not punitive. And I think, this is also a very crucial aspect of just regulating, but not over-regulating, or not regulating poorly, because that can really kill a market. So that enabling environment, and a lot of government support that companies can come into the country and be able to do business, I think that has been a very, very big aspect of scaling up these productive use appliances, and even just thinking about it's a lot. There's also the political will. I think like currently in Kenya we have a government that is very, very keen on uplifting or growing the agriculture sector. I think the fact that Kenya is an agrarian economy, the government is today's government is very, very keen on just uplifting smallholder farmers and just growing the agriculture sector, whether it's on value addition and manufacturing, but also increasing yields to get to a level of food security. There's that. They're focused on very much on the production side, but also there's a need there to just bridge the gap on value addition, and especially when you talk about food security. Like today, climate change is very, very real, and one of the impacts of climate change is unreliable rainfall. So we can no longer rely on rain-fed agriculture to say that we can predict when it's going to come. We can predict the intensity. We can't tell. We can't predict that today, especially in Africa, where we don't have very good early warning systems or very good forecasting systems. So there's a need to increase yields during the growing seasons, but also to ensure that there's a lot of value addition, whether it's on milling, fortification, or even drying, especially even on vegetables, because cooling is one of the ways to increase the shelf life of of fresh produce, but also there's milling, there's
yeah.
there's drying and dehydration, which is also a crucial
yeah.
aspect that dairy can be able to support.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think with that note, we will end today's podcast, Mike. Thanks a lot for your time and for the insight that you shared us with today. Thanks, Mike. That was Michael Miner from CLASP, who shared his insight on how we can transform our agriculture sector using renewable energy technologies. I would like to end today's episode by reminding you that you can find a wealth of sector news, analysis and data on our website powerforall.org and our platform for energy access, Knowledge Peak. If you would like to support our work, you can make a donation via our homepage. Thanks all for tuning in for this episode of the Power for All podcast.